The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Pack a Book. The must-read works by Black authors are perfect literary companions to take with you to trending destinations. Love in Color by Bolu Babalola. Swoon as you sail down the Nile in Egypt with Babalola's mythical collection of love stories set across the mother continent. The Deep Blue Between by Aisha Haruna Atta. Explore the inextricable links between West Africa and Brazil with this story of twin sisters Hassana and Husseina who struggle to reunite after they are torn from each other and separated by an ocean. Monster in the Middle by Tiffany Yannick. Bask in the sun and sand of the Virgin Islands while getting lost in this steamy tale of two lovers struggling to make their relationship endure. Black Girl in Paris by Shay Youngblood. Explore the journey of Black artists who, like the heroine in this novel, sought refuge and inspiration in Paris. The Souls of Purgatory, the spiritual diary of a 7th century Afro-Peruvian mystic by Ursula de Jesus. While there is little written about Afro-Peruvians, the diary of de Jesus provides unique first-person knowledge of the life of a formerly enslaved woman and her encounters with supernatural forces. The next article is titled, A New Found Home. 10 years after Queen Sugar brought him to New Orleans, Kofi Sarabo reflects on his love for this city and offers a peek at his new creative haven for local artists. If you had 24 hours to explore New Orleans with Kofi Sarabo, here's where he'd take you. I would start uptown, take you to St. Charles, get some food at Lebanon's Cafe, just because that's out the way, he says of the Middle Eastern restaurant. Uptown, it's Audubon Park, the oak trees, the moss, it's just gorgeous. Next, you'd make your way down Magazine Street to pursue the vintage shops in the city's commercial center, where storefronts match the Creole cottage, shotgun, and bungalow-style architecture of New Orleans houses. Then we would have to stop at the Lowe's on Hoy Dross, because that's my old stomping ground, says Sarabo of the hotel where he lived when he first came to the Crescent City from his native Los Angeles. New Orleans has been his second home for a decade. He arrived in 2015 to shoot Queen Sugar, Ava DuVernay's own drama, on which he starred for 7 seasons as Ralph Angel, the baby of the rural Louisiana Bordelon family. From his very first day there, he's been enamored with the city. The French Quarter is next on his list, but where to go afterward is a bit of a conundrum for Sarabo. This is where I get stuck, he admits, because now it's either hit that left on Esplanada, go down Trim and hit City Park, or go to Tola. I would probably go down Trim, he says, after a moment of contemplation. Chill, see all of that, then make our way back to Mor Ijani, the bywater area, and then we're posted up to Tola. Tola is an acronym for the other LA, in reference to Louisiana, the first one being the California city where Cerebo, 31, grew up in the predominantly black upper middle class neighborhood of Ladera Heights. Tola is an artistic residency in the Mor Ijani bywater area that Cerebo officially launched in February. It's a space for artists across disciplines to work on their respective crafts. There is even a recording studio to welcome musicians, a part of the property when the Star purchased it. Even before the renovations, the whole place had this super open, artistic kind of communal vibe, and its location just adds to that, he says of the home, which sits just a block from the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts. That aura is one he plans to maintain as Tola welcomes residents. The idea was to create the space as a canvas with lots of white walls and keep it really open, he explains. It's still functional, but the goal was for it to be modular, in the sense that the house can take on whatever form is needed to support whoever's there. Cerebo is currently exploring investment interests to sustain Tola's growth and expand in the near future. Up to this point, he has completely financed its operations with earnings from his acting work. He most recently appeared on the final season of Prime Video's Harlem, written, created, and produced by Tracy Oliver. She also co-wrote the Essence Festival-inspired box office hit Girls Trip, in which Cerebo starred in 2017. Another role set in the Big Easy, Black in Every Color, Art in Every Form, and event series Cerebo co-curated with gallerist Josiah David Jones has helped spread the word about his residency space and the movement, an exhibition featuring more than 12 New Orleans artists debuted at Tola during Super Bowl weekend in NOLA. It was shown again at the end of February at Los Angeles Contemporary Art Fair Freeze. Just people saying the word Tola, that's been something in my heart for 3-4 years now, Cerebo says. So for it not to be just an idea and not just an actual space, but for it to be utilized, people were in the house spilling wine on my staircase, knocking up my wall, but I was like, it's being used and with good intention. That has become the driving factor. I want to see people actually utilize the space and create in the space. Cerebo's own multidisciplinary artistry fuels his passion for Tola. Growing up, he played the violin and trumpet, and he began writing music at an early age. When he was a teenager, his interest in taking photos was awakened by smartphones and social media. Photography is one of those expressions that I don't even think of as a craft, he confesses. It's more so just the way I see life. While he plans to display some of the images he has captured inside Tola, the verdict is out on whether the public will ever get to hear the music he has written or see the feature screenplays he's developing. His multifaceted interests constantly force him to choose where he'll expend his energy next. I do everything. That's the problem, he says empathetically. It's doing everything, though, that bridged his connection to New Orleans. On one of his first nights out in the city 10 years ago, he stumbled upon a pop-up listening series called Couches on Gravier Street, where musician Christian Scott was performing. It was like walking into a gym and Kobe's playing. You're like, this is what y'all do every day, he recalls. The short answer, as Sarah Bow now knows, is yes. New Orleans is art, he says. That's really their language. That's how they communicate, most especially through music. The racial pride of the city has remained another draw for the actor with Ghanaian roots, who surprisingly hasn't yet adopted a taste for the city's Creole and Cajun cuisine. Instead, he calls out Benachin, a restaurant with dishes inspired by Cameroon and Gambia, as one of his favorites. Still, he has a reverence for the way the cultural traditions of the city's largest ethnic group are embraced parish-wide. Just being explicitly Black, coming from L.A., I love L.A., but when you move around the city and you navigate it, it's a white city. And it's an extremely contemporary city, he says. Coming to New Orleans, there was an instant recognition of the culture, the history, the landscape, the trees. There's also a dark history. We worked on a plantation for 7-8 years, but even though there is that Den senses, there's also a lot of information there that I wasn't getting in L.A. My spirit was drawn to that. The hope now is that fellow artists who feel that same pull to the bustling bayou will find a creative respite in Tola, with the space eventually becoming a shared archive, as Sarah Bow puts it. Of the many imaginative individuals who will walk through its doors, is also representative of his planting firm roots in the city, which he expects will only grow deeper with time. I know there are so many shades and colors of the South, but New Orleans is my type of South, he says. I spent my whole 20s in New Orleans. I had a lot of important things in my life happen from the lens of me being in New Orleans. When I think of 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, one day having kids, New Orleans feels like something that will be important to my personal story. He adds, it's somewhere that I always want to be able to come to and just be. The next article is titled, A Revolution on Canvas. B. Mike Odoms is using his art to amplify unheard voices and preserve New Orleans' vibrant legacy. Painting a mural in a public space is like hacking a system, he explains. You get in your car, you go from point A to point B, and sometimes you can just disappear. But then, all of a sudden, there's a mural on the wall. And that public art, he says, reminds you that you belong to something. These are some of the lessons learned as an artist and businessman that have shaped the journey for Odoms, who sees himself at best as a choir, sharing the gospel of community survival through his art. The next article is titled, The Vessel of Change, Black, Indigenous, and Low-Income Communities Are Often Left Behind in Disaster Recovery. Roy Shetup Ozane is making sure that's no longer the norm. Rosetta Ozane is driven by a commitment to justice that dates back to her childhood in Ruleville, Mississippi. Growing up, Ozane watched her aunt, a longtime civic leader, get elected as mayor, and she knocked on doors with her grandmother, encouraging community members to vote. That early exposure to activism, paired with more than 20 years living in Louisiana, laid the foundation for the work she does today. Ozane is the founder and director of the Vessel Project of Louisiana, a mutual aid disaster relief organization that helps those who are most vulnerable, Black and Indigenous people, people of color, and low-income communities. Founded in 2020, the organization was born of Ozane's personal experience of disaster displacement. She lost her home in the fallout of hurricanes Laura and Delta, both of which hit Louisiana in 2020. My children and I went from living in a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom home to being homeless, she says. That was a moment that shifted everything for me. The experience deepened Ozane's understanding of environmental injustice and exposed the inequities in disaster recovery efforts, particularly for Black and Indigenous communities. Places like Lake Charles, where Ozane lives, were overlooked when it came to receiving aid. We weren't getting the attention. We weren't getting the funding, she says, a sentiment that drove her to ensure that her community would never face this neglect again. The Vessel Project is built on the principles of mutual aid, ensuring that no one is left behind, and that support reaches those in need without the bureaucratic hurdles that often hinder access. This mission is deeply personal for Ozane, who faced these challenges firsthand. The organization provides immediate relief, offering housing assistance, essential supplies, and more, while also driving long-term systemic change. We are not just helping people improve their situations, Ozane says. We are making sure they have the tools to achieve their own goals. Over the past 4 years, the Vessel Project has supported more than 2,000 people, connecting them with resources to return to school, access job training, and build stable futures. For Ozane, the most rewarding part of her work comes from the tangible impact she has on people's lives and the fact that those she has helped can, in turn, help others. That's what mutual aid is about, she says. When you have it, you give it. When you need it, you receive it. She recognizes the historical roots of communal care and how mutual aid has strengthened and empowered Black communities throughout history. It was everybody in the community gathering what they had and putting it together, she explains, to make something special, to make something happen, to make a difference, to make a change. As we commemorate the 20th anniversary of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita this year, Ozane reflects on the lessons learned. We still have areas in New Orleans that have not come back, and places in southwest Louisiana that still have tarps, she notes. We had whole communities that were lost. We know that our government will not act the way it is supposed to, especially under the administration we currently have. So it is up to us as citizens, neighbors, brothers, and sisters to look out for each other to the best of our ability, to make sure that our community can thrive. We have to ensure that people are okay and have whatever they need to fight against what comes next, because we know something is always coming just because of the mere fact that we are Black. Beyond assisting with disaster relief, Ozane is vocal in the fight against environmental racism. Louisiana's 85-mile industrial corridor, known as Cancer Alley, is home to some 200 fossil fuel and petrochemical facilities that affect the Black, Indigenous, and low-income communities existing there. In response, Ozane tirelessly advocates for clean air and clean water policies, pushing back against federal agencies and fighting for systemic change. For Ozane, a single mother of six who is now pursuing a PhD in criminal justice, advocacy, and activism are rooted in a commitment to ensuring that her children inherit a better world. "My children give me strength," she says. "I don't want them growing up in a world where they have to fight just to breathe clean air or have a safe place to live." In her quest to make the world better for future generations, she remains hopeful despite the obstacles and current climate. "In these tumultuous times," she says, "what gives me hope is the solidarity of the people and knowing that I am not alone." The next article is titled, "There's a New Sheriff in Town." The no-nonsense chief law enforcement officer of New Orleans, a Black woman, is making history and addressing the root causes of incarceration in the city. Following the killings of Black men at the hands of police, including in Louisiana, former police monitor Susan Hudson wanted to create real change as the sheriff in New Orleans. "It's the most rewarding work I could possibly do," she says. On a sunny Sunday during the carnival season, Orleans Parish Sheriff Susan Hudson is riding along the crew of Nefertiti Parade route, shaking hands and giving many sheriff badges to the children who run up to her. Community members offer warm hugs and proudly pose for photos with Hudson. Her bright smile, joyful demeanor, and very presence challenge the idea of how someone in her position looks and acts. The word sheriff can conjure images of a gun-slinging cartoon character or the oppressive law enforcement officer who was the subject of a classic Bob Marley song. Yet the sheriff of New Orleans is a 5'4 Black woman who wears locks, holds a law degree, and has a deep love for Star Wars movies. Sheriff Hudson is the first woman sheriff in the city and the first and only Black female of the 64 sheriffs in the state of Louisiana. "Being the first is not something she takes lightly, but she's focused on her mission of reunifying Black families and stopping the generational cycles of incarceration that plague communities in NOLA. Contrary to popular belief, the sheriff's domain is not the streets. It's typically the jail in Louisiana. Hudson's job is to ensure the safety of the residents of the city's lockup, Orleans Justice Center, OJC, where people charged with a crime are held before trial. In New Orleans, the jail assists in maintaining inmates' mental health. Families cycle through uncles and nephews, fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, as residents talk about the unhealed trauma of Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath, which separated families and communities. In a tough election, Sheriff Hudson ran on a vision of transformative justice that resonated with our voters. In a place where Black folks are detained at 5 times the rate of whites, she wants to make sure that once people leave the OJC, they don't come back. When I consider that many people in jail are dealing with economic hardships, mental health challenges, addiction, and trauma, often all at once, I believe it's essential to address the root causes that led them there, she says. Transformative justice is about holding people accountable, but it's also providing the support and resources necessary for people to heal, grow, and build a better future. Hudson's road to becoming sheriff was somewhat unconventional and deeply personal. Her grandfather and great uncle were both unarmed Black men killed by law enforcement in the Jim Crow era of 1940s East Texas. There was no justice for them, and the officers who murdered them knew they could get away with it, she says of the tragedies. It scarred my family, and unwittingly, it guided my trajectory and led to my working within the criminal justice system. While many sheriffs start off as police officers, Sheriff Hudson began her career as a defense attorney and then a prosecutor in Texas. There, she says, the criminal justice system often neglected people's humanity. Our families, our loved ones, our community members were suffering. And once people became system involved, it was difficult for many to get out and stay out. She subsequently spent 17 years as a police monitor in Austin, Texas, Los Angeles, and New Orleans, ensuring that their police departments implemented and followed the Department of Justice's federal consent decrees, legal agreements designed to correct unconstitutional and illegal treatment of a city's residents. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Avery Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.